It's 12th of February, 2026, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and flying staff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, as well as our veterans service organizations, publications, and websites, and of course, information from the Veterans Administration. Starting with Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, we have this headline: Homelessness and Diagnosed Head Injuries Elevated Veteran Suicide Rates, New Report Shows. This is from the 6th of February, and it's by Linda F. Hershey, Washington. Veterans who are homeless or had recent diagnosis of traumatic brain injury had sharply higher rates of suicide in 2023 than the rest of the veteran population, according to an annual report published Thursday by the Department of Veterans Affairs. The suicide rate for veterans of the recent diagnosis of traumatic brain injury was 94% higher than for veterans without a diagnosis, according to the report. The rate among homeless veterans was 146% higher when compared to veterans with housing. The 2025 National Veteran Suicide Prevention Annual Report, based on death certificate data from 2023, showed elevated suicide rates among some of the more vulnerable veteran populations, according to the findings. Suicide was the 12th leading cause of death for veterans. There were 6,398 suicides among veterans in 2023, down by 44 over the prior year. The majority of deaths were by firearms. Veteran suicide has been a scourge on our nation for far too long, said VA Secretary Doug Collins after the agency's annual findings were released. The VA has a round-the-clock hotline that fielded 1.3 million calls, chats, and texts in fiscal 2025. That Veterans Crisis Line can be reached by dialing 988 and then extension 1, or you can text 838255. The new findings were published in two parts, an overview and an in-depth analysis with a state-by-state look. Although the number of veteran suicides in 2023 decreased over the previous year, the rate was more than 1.5 times higher than in the general adult population. The VA's yearly analysis of veteran suicides highlighted several other findings. More than half of veterans who died by suicide had documented problems with chronic pain and sleeplessness. Nearly a quarter had reported financial problems. Younger adults ages 18 to 34 had a higher suicide rate than other age groups. More than 60% of veterans who took their own lives in 2023 were not receiving health care services from the VA, according to the report. Most veterans who die by suicide were not in recent VA care. So, making it easier for those who have worn the uniform to access the VA benefits they've earned is key, Collins said. The VA's yearly report offers the public and policymakers a comprehensive look at veteran suicides across the nation. It's used to develop and fund programs that seek to address risks and prevent suicides. The publication of the 2025 report had been delayed for about 2 months, prompting demands by Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, for its release. Blumenthal is the top Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. The report is released to the public when it's issued to Congress. The VA last issued the report in December 2024. In January, the VA launched an outreach campaign that led to thousands of unenrolled veterans signing up for VA health care, the agency said. The VA is currently reviewing its suicide prevention programs to better gauge their impact, refine efforts that need improvement, and prioritize initiatives demonstrating positive outcomes, Collins said. And that was Homelessness and Diagnosed Head Injuries Elevated Veteran Suicide Rates, new report shows. Next, also from the 6th of February by Linda F. Hershey, we have this headline. Appeals court strikes down decision that let the VA deny claims without clearly notifying veterans. Washington. A federal appeals court overturned a Veterans Court decision that allowed Department of Veterans Affairs to deny claims without issuing a formal notice to the veteran. A three-judge panel sent the case back to the lower court for further action that aligns with its ruling. The U.S. Court of Appeals in Arlington, Virginia, ruled Wednesday in a case involving David A. Hamill, 36, of Illinois, who left the Marine Corps in 2013 with an other-than-honorable discharge and later was denied disability benefits because of his discharge status. The case is centered on the VA's silence when Hamill requested that the VA reconsider its character of discharge determination for denying him certain benefits. Veterans discharge determination generally must be under honorable or general conditions to qualify for VA benefits. The judges stated in their written opinion that the VA must provide clear notice to veterans when it denies claims. After all, no veteran can appeal a decision he does not understand to have been made, the judges wrote. The VA is still reviewing this decision and will respond appropriately. VA issues decision notices to all veterans who file a claim, and these notices often resolve several concurrent claims, said Peter Kasparowitz, the VA press secretary. The court sent the case back to U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims for further proceedings consistent with its opinion. Hamill's attorney stated that the VA should have supplied a decision that he could appeal in court. Veterans, especially those with lower than honorable discharges, need to receive a clear decision by the VA, said Yelena Duterte, an attorney and director of the Veterans Legal Clinic at the University of Illinois, one of the law firms representing Hamill. Failing to make a decision, as they did here, on a veteran's status may create a barrier to health care, compensation, and other VA benefits, Duterte said. Hamill's attorneys filed a lawsuit in 2022 in the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims to compel the VA to issue a decision on its discharge determination. Hamill in 2021 had received disability compensation for PTSD, but not for other ailments, according to court records. The VA argued that it sent a letter to Hamill stating he had not submitted new and material evidence to warrant reopening the case. The agency also advised him to petition to change his discharge status or update his military records. The Veterans Court issued a ruling in 2024 that dismissed Hamill's claim. Hamill then challenged the decision in federal appeals court. The new opinion issued Wednesday stated that the VA can no longer implicitly deny claims. The judges referenced rules outlined in the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, which reformed the Veterans Appeals process for contesting disability claims decisions. The opinion noted a congressional report about the act explaining that it requires the VA to issue detailed notification letters to veterans on decisions. Accordingly, we hold that under the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, a veteran has an appealable decision for a particular issue only if the decision gives him explicit notice that the issue is being adjudicated and how it is being decided, the judges wrote. The law's intent is to better inform veterans who must decide whether to appeal a VA decision regarding their claims for benefits according to the court's ruling. Veterans deserve to know what VA is doing with their claims, said Renee Burbank, Director of Litigation at the National Veterans Legal Service Program and co-counsel in the case. And that's Appeals Court Strikes Down decision that let the VA deny claims without clearly notifying veterans. Next, we have Under Pressure and Over Budget. VA officials highlight successes at automating GI Bill benefits system. Linda Hershey writes this from the 4th of February, Washington. a $2.3 billion project to modernize and operate the GI Bill benefits system run by the Department of Veterans Affairs has encountered delays, glitches, and cost overruns as technicians overhauled an extremely old IT system that relied on outdated software and a 1970s-era mainframe. Troy J. Mueller, a managing director at MITRE Corporation, offered that assessment of the multi-year effort to improve the GI Bill benefits website and implement fully automated processing of veterans' education benefits. The digital GI Bill program is large and complex and inevitably encountered challenges, unanticipated complexities, and the realization of risks that have led to scheduled delays and increased costs, Mueller said Wednesday during a joint subcommittee hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. MITRE Corporation has been responsible for providing life cycle cost estimates for the project, titled Contracting Challenges and the Need for Acquisition Reform. The joint hearing was held by the House VA subcommittees on technology modernization and economic opportunity. The purpose was to receive a status update on the technology project to re-engineer the online education benefit system and to address the higher costs and delays. VA officials said the website updates have resulted in 16 million claims getting processed in the past 5 years, delivering $43 billion in tuition assistance, housing stipends, and other benefits to veterans who are students. As of December 2025, the VA was automating and delivering 65% of all claims without any staff interaction required. Human labor has been a major driver of costs in managing GI Bill education benefits, said Justin Park, managing director at Accenture Federal Services, which is helping to implement the changes. Kenneth Smith, executive director for education service at the Veterans Benefit Administration, acknowledged that the agency initially underestimated the project's scope and complexity, which led to higher costs and delays. Modernizing the platform for GI Bill claims was originally projected to cost $500 million in fiscal 2021, but has ballooned to an estimated $2.3 billion projected through fiscal 2031. The calculation used a base year of fiscal 2021 and projected costs over a 10-year period, Mueller said. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Illinois, said the system redevelopment has been hurt by poor contract oversight. There hasn't been a successful launch of an IT system at the VA for as long as we can remember, said Representative Tom Barrett, Republican of Michigan, chairman of the Technology Modernization Subcommittee. Veterans Education Success, a nonprofit that helps veterans with their GI benefits, cited a technical problem in October 2025 that led to delayed payments for housing to thousands of students. The payments, known as Chapter 35 benefits, are for students who are the children and spouses of fully disabled veterans and service members who died in the line of duty or later from a service-connected condition. The recent debacle involving Chapter 35 benefits had the largest negative impact I've witnessed since the rollout of the post-9/11 GI Bill in 2009 and 10, and the initial issues with paper checks, wrote Joshua Ryder, executive director of the Center for Adult and Veteran Services at Kent State University. Ryder's comments were included in written testimony submitted to the panel. Representative Chris Pappas, Democrat of New Hampshire, said the VA has broken trust with families over the delayed Chapter 35 payments. He faulted the VA for lack of communication with students and families to inform them of the technical problems and keep them updated on payment delivery. Smith said most Chapter 35 supplemental claims are now fully automated, which should allow for quicker response times. But technical glitches affecting payments continue to be a problem for some students, according to Veterans Education Success. But while VA has always had an excuse for the error, the impact of these debacles falls on veterans and families who are forced to shoulder the burden of VA's repeated failures, said William Hubbard, vice president at Veterans Education Success. The VA needs to put into place more safeguards to prevent further delays, the organization said. And that's Under Pressure and Over Budget, VA Officials Highlight Successes at Automating GI Bill Benefits System. Our next article is by Max Efrin of the Northern Arizona VA Healthcare System from the 10th of February. Army veteran advocates for VA services after difficult battle with PTSD. Army veteran Kyle Blake was washing dishes in his Prescott, Arizona home when he heard cries from the next room. His breath caught and he sprinted toward the sound. In the living room, it was clear his two dogs had clashed. His Lab Ridgeback mix was hunched over a food bowl, growling. His new black Labrador puppy lay on the hardwood floor. Blood was everywhere. Kyle crouched down and lifted the puppy's small, quivering body into his arms. Streaks of blood smeared across his hands. Then the room vanished. His living room turned into desert heat and blinding light. He could hear distant shouting, a radio squawking, and the echo of gunfire. He wasn't home anymore. He was back on a mission under a sun that beat against his helmet, breathing air thick with dust. I was in theater, Kyle said. I just stood there bawling my eyes out. I was reliving something I didn't want to relive. The 38-year-old was deployed twice in his 10-year military career, once to Iraq as a light infantryman and then to Afghanistan as a sniper. When he returned to the civilian world, his life was fractured. For years, he fought against intrusive memories and numbed himself with alcohol. There was just a lot of anger, Kyle said. His wife, Lori, who he'd met after his service, eventually became somewhat of his caretaker. It got to the point where I couldn't go anywhere without her, Kyle said. Kyle didn't want to be a burden on Lori, so he often thought she would be better off without him. Not saying he would ever act on it, but there were a lot of suicidal thoughts, Lori said. I just had to keep talking him off that ledge, letting him know he's loved, he is supported. He does have people here who will not let him go. Recognizing he needed additional support, Lori took the reins. She helped him get a service dog and encouraged him to seek more serious medical attention to address his issues. When he couldn't find the right combination of effective treatment, she pushed him to be open-minded and keep trying other options. That led the couple to Northern Arizona VA Healthcare System. Kyle was skeptical at first, but he knew he had to do something different. Either I find the courage to seek help from the VA or I lose my wife and family, Kyle said. Facing his fears, getting answers. Though Kyle was convinced no one would truly understand his demons, he forced himself to try group therapy and quickly realized it was a needed piece to his puzzle. To my surprise, I saw common ground with others, Kyle said. I felt a sense of happiness, hopefulness, and finally, I was on a mission for peace. Through continued sessions, he began developing trust in Dr. Jennifer Siegler, NAVAHCS's Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Program Manager. Siegler suggested Kyle try a form of cognitive behavioral therapy called prolonged exposure, which helps people slowly confront memories, emotions, and circumstances connected to their trauma. Prolonged exposure really works for a lot of veterans, Siegler said. It's difficult, but as long as they know that going into it, then they can usually get through it. What's important to recognize with PTSD, Siegler said, is there's no one-size-fits-all treatment plan. What we really try to do is collaborate with the veteran, she said, meet them where they're at to see what type of treatment will be most helpful for them. For Kyle, a whole health approach has worked best, including how his physical trauma is connected to his mental. For instance, his patient-aligned care team at NAVAHCS identified his eyes as the cause of headaches and disorientation he frequently experienced. The trauma I had from a blast caused my eyes to revert back to being a six-year-old's eyes, he said. Kyle now goes to group therapy, prolonged exposure, physical therapy, and eye trauma therapy every week. It's been amazing, he said. I feel so much better than I did a year ago. Finding a new purpose. As Kyle's physical and mental health noticeably improved, so has his personal life. He's now able to be in public for extended periods of time and not rely on his wife to always be there to comfort him. I'm starting to feel human again, he said. That what was once an aimless hobby of playing video games has turned into a full-time occupation with meaning behind it. Using multiple online streaming channels, he now hosts video game events for his veteran peers. It gave me a purpose again, Kyle said. I have a community full of veterans that I'll do charities, fundraisers, or gatherings with. Especially for younger veterans, gaming gets us out of our heads and makes it easier to open up and be there for each other. And instead of bottling his emotions up like he used to, Kyle now shares everything about his PTSD journey with his family, friends, and anyone who needs to hear it. With hard work, determination, a few hiccups, and giving yourself a little grace, you can be successful, Kyle said. To a crowd of peers and community members during a PTSD awareness event. For me, that fracture I mentioned earlier, it began to heal. Yours can too. Note, the puppy mentioned in the intro made a full recovery and is now in training to become Kyle's service dog. That's Army Veteran Advocates for VA Services after difficult battle with PTSD. Our next article is from MilitaryTimes.com by Hope Hodge-Sack. And, of course, last weekend was the Super Bowl, and her article is Meet the Pilots Executing the Rare Navy Air Force Super Bowl Flyover. This is from the 7th of February. And I don't know if you saw that flyover, but as a military pilot myself, I have to say they did a very good job. Looked good to me. The article. For Air Force B-1 Lancer bomber pilot top off flying over the Super Bowl as the final notes of the Star-Spangled Banner linger in the air isn't just a stunning flourish for the game. It's also a way of highlighting the precision that bomber pilots train for. A big part of what we do in the bomber force is making sure we show up somewhere exactly on time, said Topoff, a captain who asked to be identified only by his call sign for operational security reasons. And you look at some of the operations that take place across the world, timing and flying from the U.S. to somewhere is a really big part of making sure everything happens. The flyover, a rare joint Navy-Air Force display for the Super Bowl, is set to include 8 aircraft total. 2 B-1s from Ellsworth Air Force Base, South Dakota, 2 Air Force F-15C Eagles from the Fresno Air National Guard Base, California, and a pair each of Navy FA-18 Super Hornets and F-35C Joint Strike Fighters, all from Naval Air Station Lemoore, California. The aircraft will all take off from Moffett Federal Airfield, less than 10 miles away from Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, where the New England Patriots and Seattle Seahawks are set to face off on Sunday. We'll set up an orbit about 10 to 15 miles south of the field, Topoff said. We know the time for when the national anthem starts and how we'll be able to alter the flyover based on the pace that we actually see the national anthem going. We have computer software in the jet that enables us to see to the second what our time over a point will be. So we'll manage our airspeed, our timely turn-in, and everything to get it right over the top of the field exactly on time. Navy Lieutenant Commander Kevin Greer, who will pilot one of the FA-18s in the flyover, said, "Having two services involved in the demonstration made preparation vital. We fly close formation very frequently, but we don't always do it with the Air Force," he told Military Times, ahead of a mission rehearsal flight on Friday. "We want to make sure everything goes flawlessly. We've already gone through the brief, ad nauseum, line after line. Everybody kind of knows their role, and today we're going to put it into practice." According to Navy Ground Coordinator Lieutenant Commander Dwayne Hooper, VFA-2, the Navy's FA-18 Fighter Squadron, also known as the Bounty Hunters, got tasked with the Super Bowl mission shortly after returning from a carrier strike group deployment to the Pacific last fall. all through the Christmas holidays, we're getting timelines down, Hooper said. It's pretty funny how quickly you go from getting used to life on the boat to getting back home and back in the swing of things here. Just really highlights how flexible we are as a unit, being able to kind of go from the expectations that we have on deployment to the expectations that we have back here at home. While Topoff, a Cardinals fan, doesn't have a rooting interest in this year's Super Bowl, getting selected to participate in the nation's biggest sporting event is still a thrill. We're very professional in the military, but the honor of the Super Bowl is not lost on us, he said. It puts a little bit more pressure on what we do. Specifically as bomber people, a big part of what we do is long-range strikes, showing up somewhere, right place, right time. The added stress that comes from being on a national stage helps us train with a little bit less artificiality and a little more authentic stress. Greer will bring with him in the cockpit several American flags given to him by Navy retirees to fly over the Super Bowl. He said he's also excited about keeping the distinctive Super Bowl uniform patch as a memento. Then there's the thrill of being able to attend the big game, a first for both Greer and Hooper. Following the flyover, it'll be a sprint back here to hop in a van to get to the game to get to go watch some good football, Hooper said. And everybody, the maintainers, the support crew, all the air crew that participated in the flyover, will get recognized at the beginning of the third quarter. On the Navy side, one of the Super Hornet pilots, Lieutenant Dalton Stewart, is a Patriots fan who'll be able to root for his team and see the stadium from the sky. For Greer, who roots for the Baltimore Ravens, getting picked for the flyover was nonetheless thrilling. I was ecstatic, he said. I grew up a big-time football fan. Just having the opportunity to play a small role in this has been really exciting. A lot of pride for my community as well, from where I grew up and hearing from people back home when they heard I was doing the flyover. Just kind of brings a smile to my face. I've just been so proud to just be a part of it. Well, I don't know if you, like I said, if you didn't see the flyover, it was extremely well executed and the timing was perfect. That article, Meet the Pilots Executing the Rare Navy Air Force Super Bowl Flyover. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, either as it streams or at a time of your choosing. You can do that by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website, and that's at sunsounds, one word, sunsounds.org, or you can download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, and you can get that for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store, or go to the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And of course, you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona as it streams on your Amazon Dot Echo or Show. We'll turn now to an article from the American Legion magazine from February. American First. Air Force legend Daniel Chappie James is revered for not just breaking race barriers, but his love of country. Libyan Colonel Muammar Gaddafi stood at the main gate of the Wheelis Air Base 6 weeks after leading a coup deposing King Idris. Facing Gaddafi on the gate's other side was a U.S. officer, a base commander, Daniel Chappie James, also a colonel. The resemblance between the two men ended at rank. 6 weeks earlier, Gaddafi had been an obscure lieutenant in the Libyan army. As leader of the coup and chairman of the newly minted Revolutionary Command Council, he was catapulted to colonel overnight. James, in contrast, had earned his rank the hard way. Overcoming racial prejudice and battle-tested in Korea and Vietnam as a fighter pilot. The confrontation occurred October 18, 1969, when Gaddafi ordered a column of Libyan half-tracks to breach Wheelis' main gate and race through the housing area. James immediately came to the gate and closed the barrier. A few yards beyond it stood Gaddafi, hand on his pistol. James glared at him, his own .45 ready at his side. "Move your hand away from that gun," he ordered. Gaddafi wisely complied. As James later recalled, if he had pulled that gun, he never would have cleared his holster. James grew up in Pensacola, Florida, where he dreamed of becoming a military pilot, an all but unattainable goal for a black man in the 1930s. But his parents taught him to pursue excellence, a trait that eventually took James to the top of his profession. His mother established a private school, drilling into her students that they were first and foremost Americans. Excellence is a standard throughout the world, and no one questions its color, he told them. Remember, you're an American, not an African. Loyalty, responsibility, and the future lay in America. A fervent proponent of this philosophy, James was sharply criticized by some for his America First attitude. He was quick to reply that he'd suffered plenty because of race. He eschewed the term African American, preferring to be known as an American first and black second. His response to prejudice was that if they were going to hinder me with racism, I was going to overcome through the power of excellence. James' personal victories were hard won and helped pave the way for many blacks who followed him into military service. Receiving his commission as a second lieutenant and pilot wings at Tuskegee Army Airfield in July 1943, he felt enormous pride. Still, promotions that were routine for white officers came slowly, if at all, for blacks. In 1948, President Harry Truman signed an executive order mandating equal treatment in the armed forces, laying the groundwork for the end of segregation. James' gregarious personality won him friends throughout the newly formed Air Force. 6 feet 4 inches and 250 pounds, he was easily the largest fighter pilot, so big he once had to be cut out of a cockpit. He wore a Black Panther insignia on his flight helmet before it became identified with a movement, later remarking, he was the first Black Panther, and the difference is this Black Panther fights for his country. During the Korean War, James realized his dream of aerial combat, completing more than 100 combat missions, an F-51 Mustang and F-80 Shooting Star aircraft, and gaining the respect of his fellow aviators. As his star continued to rise, James was recognized as a gifted speaker, too. His trademark finale was the singing of his favorite spiritual, Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho. He felt the song had meaning for the times. Those trumpets bring down the walls with truth, justice, and brotherhood for all people. When the United States entered the Vietnam War, James continued his distinguished career, serving as vice commander of the 8th Tactical Fighter Wing under the legendary Colonel Robin Olds. Their call signs, Black Man and Robin, James flew 78 missions into North Vietnam, including the Operation Bolo mission that destroyed 7 communist MiG-21 aircraft, the highest total kill of any mission during the war. By 1967, many in the U.S. publicly, openly opposed the war. When black militants incited violence, James was greatly disturbed. He felt that extremists like H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael were setting the civil rights movement back and did not speak for the majority of blacks. James summarized his views in an essay he composed for the Freedom Foundation contest in 1967, titled Freedom, My Heritage, My Responsibility. His submission won the George Washington Medal that year. I am, James wrote, a Negro, and therefore I am subject to their constant harangue. They say you, James, are a member of a minority. You are a black man. You should be disgusted with this American society. You can only progress as far in any field that you choose before somebody puts his foot on your neck for no other reason than you are black. You are a second-class citizen. He responded with a fierce determination and pride. I am a citizen of the United States of America, he continued. I am not a second-class citizen, and no man here is unless he thinks like one, reasons like one, or performs like one. Today's world situation requires strong men to stand up and be counted, no matter what their personal grievances are. Our great weapon is one we have always possessed, our heritage of freedom, our unity as a nation. These beliefs made James a favorite on the lecture circuit. He was an enthusiastic and forceful voice for patriotism in a time when that seemed politically incorrect. In 1969, he was up for promotion to brigadier general, his lifelong goal, but he was passed over. Instead, he got an assignment that would test not only his military, but his diplomatic skills, Libya. In July 1969, James reported to Wheelis near Tripoli. He was scheduled to assume command of the base in October, but Gaddafi staged his coup before the change could occur. Both the State and Defense Departments felt confident in James' ability to meet the challenge. U.S.-Libyan relations deteriorated as Gaddafi pressured the U.S. government to withdraw and leave behind expensive technical equipment to keep the base running. The Americans refused, removing most critical pieces. A serious confrontation almost occurred when Libyan Colonel Ferjani and several other young colonels demanded an audience with James. He invited the Libyans to his home to discuss the issue of the base equipment. Tensions were already high as the Libyans entered the living room, their driver carrying a submachine gun. James immediately stood and glowered at the Libyans. "I'm going to count to three," he said, "and if that SOB's not out of my living room by that time, I will physically throw him out." The driver made a hasty retreat. I'd just like to add a little side note in here. I personally had an opportunity to meet General James, and he was an extremely imposing figure. As base personnel and their families began to withdraw, the several thousand Americans living in Tripoli felt as if they were losing their best friend. Weekend trip to Wheelis to watch the airmen play intramural football, eat real cheeseburgers, and buy American comic books and magazines would be missed. Many U.S. civilians working for oil companies in Tripoli were veterans, allowing them access to the base and its facilities. Sunday brunch at the officers' club was a tradition for many families. Thanks to Gaddafi, all that ended. After the revolution, there were fears of curfews, food shortages, and sporadic gunfire. Families huddled around their radios to hear the latest BBC news reports. The American expatriates felt some comfort with Wheelis down the road and a battle-tested commanding officer like James. Just before the formal evacuation of the base was announced, one last football game was scheduled. Libyan police refused entry to off-base Americans, but James appeared to take command of the situation. Someone called out, "Colonel, do you think we'll get on base tonight?" He answered, "Yes, but it may be the last time." That answer was prophetic. On December 24, 1969, U.S. Ambassador Joseph Palmer and James announced the base's closure. About the time James left Wheelis, he learned he'd been nominated a Brigadier General. In July 1970, the promotion was made official, and the goal James had set as a young man achieved. By 1975, he was a four-star general. His final command was Commander-in-Chief of the North American Air Defense Command, NORAD. Unfortunately, years of hard work and stress took a toll on James's health. He suffered a heart attack, but after a brief recovery, resumed his relentless pace. Finally, he had to confront the fact of his heart disease and retire January 26, 1978. A month later, the great warrior was dead at 58. James is hailed for helping to make it possible for Black Americans to become whatever they want to be in the military and in life. He earned the respect he was given and believed that a unified America is strongest. He had four stars on his shoulder, President Ronald Reagan said of James in 1987, and 50 stars in his heart. Our author, Jody Haynes, Jr., is a former Navy doctor and member of Blackwell Fraser American Legion Post 142 in Hominy, Oklahoma. Haynes was 13 and living in Tripoli with his family during the 1969 Revolution. He met Chappie James on two occasions when he won a patriotic essay contest at his school, and James presented him with the prize, and when James was working the main gate at Wheelis Air Force Base before the final football game. That was from the American Legion magazine, American First. Air Force legend Daniel Chappie James is revered not for just breaking race barriers, but his love of country. Now we'll turn to the VA for some information. And our first item is the Phoenix VA Healthcare System Veterans News Now newsletter. And their first item is National Salute to Veteran Patients. The week of February 14th each year is our opportunity to say thank you to a special group of men and women. The more than 9 million veterans who are cared for at VA medical centers, outpatient clinics, and nursing homes. During the National Salute, Phoenix VA is glad to have veterans groups, military personnel, and civic organizations participate in a variety of activities at our VA medical center and clinics. And they've listed activities, and the ones that we can pass on to you that are still timely. Thursday, today, the 12th, at 10:30 a.m., cake cutting at the main campus and at the 32nd Street campus and at the Southeast Clinic. There'll be piano music at the 32nd Street Clinic. That's Army veteran Alex Morano playing. The Apache Spirit Band will be at the main campus at the canteen patio, and there will be pizza at the main campus canteen patio, and that's from that is at MOCA Auxiliary Pup Tent 10. On Friday, tomorrow, 10:30 a.m., cake cutting at the main campus for Blue Star Moms, cake cutting at the 32nd Street Clinic. That will be from the American Legion Auxiliary Unit 44, and cake cutting at the Southeast Clinic, and that's MOCA Pup Tent 10. They're also having VA celebration of Black History Month. And as we celebrate Black History Month, we honor the long and distinguished history of veterans who have served our nation with dedication. Many great Americans to celebrate during Black History Month, including generations of veterans who've served in our military since the Revolutionary War. From Dr. Howard Kinney to Vernice Ferguson, from Viola Johnson to Jesse Brown and beyond, Black leaders have been a force for positive change at VA, and it's through their examples that we continue to find new ways to improve support for veterans, caregivers, and survivors. As we look to the future, we remain committed to building on the foundation laid by these remarkable leaders. Together, we can continue to make meaningful progress and uphold the values that these trailblazers have championed. Then, under their upcoming events, the 2026 National Veterans Golden Age Games, the registration for the visually impaired and wheelchair divisions will open at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, February 18th, 2026. Veterans will log in to the Registration for Vets platform to register, and you can get registration ready at department.va.gov/veteran-sports/national-veterans-golden-age-games. Registration for the ambulatory division will open at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, February 19th, 2026. Log in also at the Registration for Vets platform, and you can get registration ready again at that same website, department.va.gov/veteran-sports/national-veterans-golden-age-games, each word separated by a hyphen. Then on Tuesday, February 17th, from 4 to 6 p.m., at the Sun Devil Fitness Complex, and that's at 400 East Apache Boulevard, Tempe, Arizona, and there'll be a campus-to-government career fair. You can connect with federal, state, and local agencies, including the FBI, U.S. Secret Service, Maricopa County, and Arizona State partners to explore public service career pathways and build professional connections in government. And again, that's on the 17th of February, 4 to 6 p.m., Sun Devil Fitness Complex, 400 East Apache Boulevard, Tempe, Arizona. There'll be a 2026 Veterans Open House that is Friday, February 20th, 2 to 4 p.m. at the Roundhouse Cafe, honoring our brave service members. There'll be many veteran resources, raffles, and a surprise vendor. For more information, you can call 480-362-7884, And again, Friday, February 20th, 2 to 4 p.m., Roundhouse Cafe, 10047 East Osborne Road, Scottsdale, Arizona, 85256. There will be a Maricopa County Veteran Stand Down, and that will be on March 12th and 13th. On the 12th from 8 to 3, and again from 8 to 3 on the 13th. This will be at the Arizona State Fairgrounds, 1862 West McDowell Road, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007. Open to all veterans in need of the following complimentary support and resources. There will be court and legal services, employment support, MVD services, housing assistance, VA benefits, disability claims, Social Security, education services, vision and medical support, mental health, PTSD support, Department of Economic Security, VA health care. There'll be showers and hygiene assistance, pet care and vaccinations, and so much more. A program of the Arizona Housing Coalition, the Arizona Veterans Stand Down Alliance, hosts the Maricopa County Stand Down each year to serve veterans and their families who are experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity. Attendees receive complimentary resources in the form of housing assistance, veterans benefits support, haircuts, employment opportunities, hot meals, clothing and surplus, medical and vision assistance, veterans court assistance, mental health support, personal care and hygiene products, veterinary care, disability assistance, survivor benefits, and more. This stand-down event is the nation's largest of its kind. And again, that's going to be on the 12th and 13th from 8 to 3 p.m. at the Arizona State Fairgrounds. There will be a Women Veterans Town Hall. You can join the Phoenix VA Women Veterans Tele Town Hall on Thursday, March the 12th, from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. The topic will be healthy aging, and there'll be presentations from psychology, nutrition, recreation therapy, and community care. There's three ways to join. You can stream online at access.live/PHXVA Women Vets. It's all one word, PHXVA Women Vets. You can accept the VA phone call to automatically join, and you can dial in by calling 855-962-1525. Then we have news and information. The VA is hiring more than 300 employment counselors and specialists. The Department of Veterans Affairs is recruiting more than 300 vocational rehabilitation counselors and specialists for its Veterans Readiness and Employment Program. There are positions open across the nation, and VA is accepting applications through March 17th. Those interested in applying should visit Find VRS VRC Positions under Featured Positions. And that link is actually at benefits.va.gov, and you can search there for featured positions and find VRS/VRC positions. Those with backgrounds in vocational rehabilitation, counseling, social work, or related fields are encouraged to apply. The VRNE program is one of VA's most impactful benefits and provides individual counseling, employment services, educational support, and rehabilitation assistance to veterans with service-connected disabilities. As part of the program, veterans work with counselors and specialists to overcome barriers to employment and achieve long-term career success. Next, the Phoenix VA Connected Care Department would like to remind you of the Virtual Health Resource Center, VHRC. Their purpose, to increase digital literacy, confidence using technology, and access to VA care for veterans. They have a VHRC pop-up, the main campus at the ACC entrance, and that's Tuesday from 9 to 11. And then the roadshow is at the CBOC lobby, and that's on the last Tuesday of the month, and that's from 10 to 1300. The VHRC provides hands-on support, training, and troubleshooting guidance to help veterans, family members, and caregivers connect to high-quality VA care from the comfort of their homes. VHRC staff are subject matter experts who are available in person, video, or phone appointments to help veterans easily and conveniently use technology to click into care. And you can call 602-277-5551, and that's extension 6680 for VHRC assistance. And after hours, you can call 866-651-3180 and press 1 for VET. And that's the information from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, Veterans News Now. Well, let's move on now to news.va.gov, and this item, esketamine treatments for severe depression. This is from the 9th of February by Jeff Holshey, Public Affairs Officer, VA Columbia, Missouri Healthcare System. VA has options for you. Esketamine, a novel and mental health treatment therapy, is being used across VA for veterans with treatment-resistant depression and acute suicidality. Esketamine is administered under the supervision of trained clinicians, and the therapy is delivered via an intranasal device in the form of a spray. Patients are treated in a clinic where they're observed by a medical team for 2 hours. After the 2-hour monitoring period, they're cleared prior to discharge with approved transportation. Esketamine is one of the most effective FDA-approved antidepressant therapies available today, said Dr. Sarah Canoy, a psychiatrist at Truman VA in Columbia, Missouri. Its use is especially effective for those experiencing treatment-resistant depression. Since we began offering this option in 2022, we've been able to increase its availability to our veterans, especially after we opened a new dedicated treatment room in January 2024. How it works? Typically, esketamine treatments are given twice a week for the first month per protocol, Canoy continued. If the patient's symptoms improve, treatments are continued. The frequency of maintenance phase is based on the patient's response to the medication and the continued improvement of depressive symptoms. For people who haven't had success with other antidepressant therapies, esketamine may be a tool that offers them a chance to see what it's like to have significantly reduced or no depression. It also provides positive reinforcement that they can feel better with the right treatment. Very happy and excited that we can provide this level of care for our veterans. Veterans interested in the esketamine treatment can ask for a referral from their mental health provider. Esketamine treatments for severe depression. Our next item, Take a Journey with Paws, February 8th, by Stephanie Lingad. She's a public affairs specialist for the Palo Alto healthcare system. For many veterans, a transition to civilian life can be filled with challenges, especially when traditional therapies fall short. Tara Pepia, a veteran of the Army National Guard, found herself in such a predicament. Despite trying various treatments like exposure therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and psychotherapy, nothing seemed to alleviate her symptoms of PTSD. That was until she discovered the Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members, or PAWS, pilot program at VA Palo Alto. What motivated me was the fact that the other modalities didn't work for me, Pepias shared. I spoke to one of the healthcare administrators about what other options I had, and she offered me to try the PAWS program. The PAWS program involves veterans helping to train service dogs for other veterans. For Pepia, it offered a hands-on experience that felt different from anything she'd tried before. She learned practical training techniques, such as using the word yes to reinforce positive behavior. One of the most meaningful aspects of the program for Pepia was how it helped her become more aware of her emotions. I've learned that dogs are capable of amazing things and that our energy affects the animal. If I'm in an anxious state, my dog is going to respond to that. It makes me want to be better, so maybe I can self-regulate on my own now so that I don't affect my dog, she explained. Finding her why. The program also gave Papilla a sense of purpose and connection. At the time, I wasn't sleeping well, and being part of PAWS gave me something to look forward to, even on days I wasn't there. I enjoyed seeing the other veterans and the instructors who were calm and supportive. The dogs added to that peaceful atmosphere, she said. Papilla's journey with the PAWS program highlights the unique benefits of service animals for veterans. The program not only helped her, but also has the potential to benefit many others who might be struggling with similar issues. I think dogs are a great healing modality because, maybe for other people, it does work to talk about your problems. But for me, sometimes you just don't want to talk about it, she reflected. Papilla continues to advocate for the PAWS program and hopes it will expand to reach more veterans across the country. It's never too late to apply for VA health care you've earned. If you're a veteran or know a veteran who's not yet applied for the VA health care benefits, learn how to get started at www.choose.va.gov/health. And that was Take a Journey with PAWS. Next we have Start the Year Right by Donating Blood, February 7th by Shane Suzuki, Communication Specialist, the VHA Clinical Services. Be a hero in your community. With the new year, you and your loved ones can make a difference by pledging to donate blood. It's a simple act that saves lives. VA supports blood drives nationwide. Donating blood is a simple yet essential act that helps save lives, and VA is once again supporting blood drives across the country. Someone in the U.S. requires blood every 2 seconds, according to the Red Cross. Because it can take 24 to 48 hours to process, test, and prepare a pint of blood for transfusion, the nation's blood supply depends on the regular generosity and diversity of blood donors. VA is asking that healthy individuals of all blood types, backgrounds, and ethnicities consider donating as soon as possible. On the battlefield, I trusted my brothers and sisters in uniform, said Ruby Rose Magbanua from the VA Tennessee Valley Healthcare System. In the hospital, I trusted the strangers who donated the blood that saved my life. Ongoing donations make a difference. Regular donations ensure the availability of the blood supply for veterans and patients in need. And that's all the time we have for Start the Year Right by Donating Blood. Well, you've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille and remind you, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store for your iPad or iPhone or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.